Welcome to Melt University's 2020 summer program. This year, our virtual intern program will help you build your brand, inform you on a variety of career paths, and introduce you to top executives in sports and marketing. Here's your host, President and CEO of Melt, one of the largest independent sports and event marketing agencies in the country, Vince Thompson.
Good day, Melt U students. We are delighted you're joining in. We're getting our podcast up and rolling, our Lunch and Learns up and rolling, and we are very excited about this amazing summer, and we've got a very, very special guest joining us today, very dear friend of Melt and mine personally, Michael Schreck, who is the CEO and co-founder of Collegiate Sports Management Group. Michael has always been a leader in the media and communications business, and now is emerging as a leader in the collegiate sports business and the next generation of sports marketers. So we're in for a treat today. As president and CEO of CSMG, drive the business for collegiate and conference and schools. We're going to get into that today. A graduate of SUNY Oneonta, with a degree in sports marketing communications, began his professional journey with the amazing New York Mets, one of my favorite teams. Had a hugely successful career with the Westwood One radio network, where he negotiated over $250 million in sports broadcast rights. And so today, students, we're going to talk about so many opportunities that Mike is going to help you enlighten and discover on your campus. As we always say, and we will continue to say, that the college campus is the ultimate professional laboratory. And Michael is going to be very helpful today in helping you truly understand what that means and where those opportunities are. So, welcome, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Vince, and always great to be with you and catch up. And I love what you continue to do with the Melt U program. And it seems like every year you get better and better students that participate in the program. And I'm fortunate enough to be with you today.
Well, thank you for being on. Thank you for participating, because I think you got a lot of valuable information. And you know, it's fascinating. We've all been faced with these challenges of COVID-19, and it had always been our dream to evolve Melt University into a virtual Melt University environment. And necessity being the mother of invention, we've evolved it, because now we're able to get speakers such as yourself on our program that may or may not have been able to physically come and address our, 40 students. And so now we can share it with, hundreds and thousands of kids across the country. So from the top, as CEO and co-founder of Collegiate Sports Management Group, a couple of things. Tell our kids, what you do and what your company does, but also take a step back and help them understand really what the third tier multimedia rights business means for colleges and universities, and then we'll segue later into how these kids can take advantage of it. But talk about for a minute what exactly third tier and multimedia rights means in the college space.
Yeah, sure. So Collegiate Sports Management Group was founded 5.5 years ago by myself and my business partner Ray Katz. And the vision of the entire organization was that we would create a college sports properties group focused outside the Power Five, in mid-major world of Division One, on down into Division Two, Division Three, and junior college. And when I say outsourced properties group, is that we take the expertise that we have across licensing, ticketing, media, sponsorship, and any revenue-driving vertical that will help the conferences and the institutions, and we basically are resources to them with our expertise in the marketplace. And the reason why we're so focused on that niche market is that you have folks like Learfield and IMG and JMI and others that have had success with the Power Fives. But you really didn't have any companies that were having great success with mid-majors on down into 2, 3 in junior college. And so our focus on the business was with media, sponsorship, ticketing, and licensing all kind of coming together, the world we live in changing from linear broadcast to everything being streamed or on mobile devices, and sponsorship world really becoming more imperative as it related to data and analytics, we felt that we could add tremendous value to these smaller type colleges, universities, and conferences where they don't have the resources and or the expertise in driving revenue. And so we set out to focus on that. And now we've built the company up to where we represent almost 30 college conferences and just north of 1,000 schools across that ecosystem. And the ultimate goal is that we're a partner and we're helping them drive revenue across the verticals that I mentioned.
Well, that sounds like an amazing business model. So let's break it down a little more. So a typical college athletic department, for the students who may or may not know, has multiple revenue streams coming into that department. They may probably have some form of television rights, which may come from ESPN. They may come from an over-the-top service. They may come from CBS or NBC. Then they have apparel sponsorships, say a Nike or an Adidas. Then they have people who buy the tickets who actually attend the events. And then they have the ability to market and sell, say, the rights to listen to the games on the radio or stream them on their phone or on their app. And so obviously you've got what we call the Power Fives, which are the Auburns and the Alabamas, the LSU, the Michigans, but you've got hundreds of schools, literally thousands of schools that are also running athletic departments, maybe on a smaller scale because the school's smaller or something like that, but they still are looking for those same types of revenue streams. And so what Michael does is he goes to these conferences because there's dozens of athletic conferences. Obviously there's hundreds and thousands of colleges and teams, but so the same business model applies, even though they may not be the scale of say of an Auburn and Alabama. So what the service Michael is providing is hugely important to these colleges and universities. And so Michael will step back a minute and then we'll segue back into it. But you began your professional journey for the New York Mets. And so coming out of college, you had a degree in sports marketing communication. So it's clear that you had a passion for sports, obviously early on in life, like myself. And so you channel that passion in college, and then you parlayed it into your first professional journey, which was sales for the New York Mets. So talk about that for a couple minutes. Was that sort of your dream job that, hey, I'm a New York kid, you know, I love the Mets, I want to pursue my degree, and then I want to try to go to work for the organization. Was that sort of what drove that?
Yeah, Vin. So when I was a junior in college, just thinking about, you know, what's going to kind of come next, and obviously always been an athlete, you know, growing up. Dad was a college athlete, sister was a college athlete. So it certainly runs in the family. And I just kept thinking, if you can't be a pro athlete, but I love business and I have a passion for business and I love sports, how do you kind of put two and two together? And I was always told in my whole life that I have a personality for sales. I'm still not sure what that means, but sure.
No, I get that.
So I just kept thinking, how do I kind of best utilize the skill sets that I have? And so I actually, Vin, I'm reading an article my senior year of college about ticket revenue in Major League Baseball. And at that time, I'm reading the article, and the Mets were ranked like 29th out of Major League Baseball teams in ticket revenue. And I saw postings where they were starting this group that was basically going to come in and you were going to be entry-level cold call ticket sellers for a bunch of these Major League Baseball teams. Mm-hmm. And so I actually cold called the front office of the New York Mets, told them I had just read this article and that I would be interested in a position to work in their ticket sales department. And after two or three cold calls, I got somebody to call me back. I pitched them on the phone as to why I could come in for an interview. And I went in on my spring break, my senior year, to interview with the Mets and got hired as a ticket seller for the day I graduated in May, right after undergraduate college.
So you knew you had that passion. And so the point we're continuing to try to make to our kids, and we're going to make it all summer, is that pursue your passion, whatever it is, relentlessly. And so if you, you know, if you love what you're doing, you'll never work a day in your life. If you love what you're doing, the money will follow. Do what you love, the money will follow. And so we're going to continue to talk to these kids a lot about that this summer. And so you had this tremendous success with the New York Mets, and then you took a gig with a company called Westwood One. And you guys may not remember this because it was more it was very dominant in the terrestrial radio. Everybody's on the streaming and satellite services now. But if you would be listening to the March Madness on terrestrial radio, they would say, "This broadcast brought to you by Westwood One," which was a radio syndication company that allowed you to listen to those games, whether you were at a station in Birmingham or Atlanta or New York City or whatever. So, Michael, you go from your journey with the New York Mets, then you go into Westwood One. So talk a little bit about talk about really what that means. And so if Westwood One would go acquire the certain broadcast rights to, say, the Super Bowl or March Madness on the radio, your job was to not only negotiate those deals, but then sell the sponsorships and advertising across those deals, correct?
Yeah, that's correct, Vin. And I'm going to take a step back and then quickly go on to Westwood One, but I think it's relevant for here.
Okay.
Is that when I was hired with the New York Mets, and they called me and they said, "Hey, congratulations, we want to bring you on, but we're only going to pay you $6.50 an hour, mm-hmm. and you're going to go and sell Mets tickets. What do you think?" And Vin, I don't even remember hearing that they were going to even pay me at all. I was just so damn excited to get a job and be in the sports industry and put that little New York Mets logo on my business card that at that age of 21, 22 years old, I didn't even care if they were going to pay me.
Right. And Michael, that's another point we'll continue to make to our kids this summer, is that we all live in now in a world of instant gratification. But in our industry, sometimes you got to do what you got to do to get that foot in the door. Sometimes you got to take something that you might not normally take. Sometimes it may not be the best job offer in the world. But if you can afford to take it, you cannot afford not to take it. So to get in, because to your point, I worked for a limited amount of money my way through Auburn in sports information. And so, but it got me in there. It got me going. And so to your point, and we're going to talk about that in just a little bit, and you made a great point, is that it never was about the money getting involved with the Mets. It was about the opportunity, which would then translate to you being able to make a great living over time. And so talk about Westwood One. To say you've negotiated $250 million, that's a big number. But break that down for our listeners and help them understand, when you say that, what that means.
Yeah, sure. So I leave the Mets after 4.5 years, did a few years in ticket sales, then elevated to corporate sponsorships, and then ultimately left for a great opportunity at Westwood One, where I came in as the director of sports. And so what that meant was that I was going to be on the front lines of negotiating broadcast rights agreements on the radio with the National Football League, the NHL, the Olympics, the Masters, and great properties like that, because Westwood One is the largest sports portfolio in the country for audio. And then the other piece to the job was that I got to oversee selling it, which was the sponsorship arm. And so I spent 9 years at Westwood One. I was elevated 4 times in 9 years, from director to VP to SVP to EVP, where ultimately I was in charge of $150 million P&L, and I was negotiating all the rights agreements, you know, with a team. And when I say rights agreements, we're talking about Olympic agreements with the International Olympic Committee, National Football League agreements where, you know, it's $1 billion a year on television, but, you know, it's still $25, $30, $40 million a year on the radio. And then focused on how am I going to grow that and sell that to either strategic partners like a Sirius XM radio or a TuneIn mobile app to recoup and offset some of the rights fee. And then how are we going to go and sell that to national brands like a Coca-Cola or some of these other great brands? So it was a great 9-year run. But the thing that excited me most and got me going every day was that I had some great CEOs and bosses along the way that really let me be entrepreneurial and run essentially a sports vertical and control my own P&L. And so we grew that division, Vin, in my 9 years, we grew almost $40 million. And then I said it was time to move on.
So that led to the formation of the Collegiate Sports Management Group. So let's talk about, let's use a relevant example for a student listening in today. Let's pick one of your universities that you work with, and let's superimpose that kid into one of those universities. Break down for this kid, for our students, because I can, like I said, I can personalize my experience from sports information at Auburn. But break down when, so we say to our kids, the campus is the ultimate professional lab. So if a kid comes to you and says, hey, Michael, tell me all the opportunities on campus that I can gain relevant experience at an athletic department or athletic programs, no matter the size of the campus, from your point of view as a media and marketing professional, break down those opportunities, what those would be for the kids.
Yeah, sure. So there's a lot of different areas that the students can go in these days. And when I say go in, I mean get internships, just lend a hand if they want to get some hands-on experience. But Vin, it ranges from any type of revenue opportunity, like I said before, whether that be the ticket office, you know, and learning the ins and outs of ticketing, whether that be the promotion department and learning how to integrate sponsors and promotion, to production and broadcast journalism, being on-air talent, helping with legal if they have a legal background or they're interested in law. Obviously, you know, everybody's always writing contracts no matter what industry you're in. There's so many different areas and paths that these kids can focus on now. Esports has become a big one. There's fan engagement platforms out there where you're running contests and doing different social media metric posting. There's a lot of different areas for these students to explore. And one of the big ones is data and analytics right now.
Yeah. Right?
Everything's driven by data.
Yep.
So as these students figure out what they want to do and what they're passionate about, you know, there's 10, 15 different areas of the sports marketing business that's on campus that they could dabble in.
So they could work in the ticket department. They could work in the sponsor department. They could work in analyzing who's buying those season tickets. They could help sell sponsorships. They could help put the games on. They could help put on the radio broadcast. So what you're saying truly reinforces what we've all said, is that, hey, if you want to be in the sports and event business, there's no greater place in the world to try to break into that than the athletic department of your school. So Michael, put yourself back as a student. Who and how do these kids, you know, reach out to? I know mine was just sort of a series of fortunate circumstances, but do these kids go to the athletic department and ask to speak to the athletic director and offer to volunteer? What would be your one solid piece of advice against that?
Yeah, I think that you should absolutely figure out quickly when you're on campus what your network looks like and who some of the people that you know, trust, and respect are, and go and get some sound advice for them. And that could range from a coach of an individual sport mm-hmm. to somebody that's sitting in the athletic department chair, whether that be the AD, a deputy AD, an SWA, somebody that handles scheduling, anybody that you can come in contact with and you can network with and you can understand what they do. And if it meets your passion points and what excites you, those conversations are endless. You know, Vin, I teach at the graduate level, global sports media and sports innovation. And I just graduated 17 kids last semester, had me at their final semester. And they were all panicked and saying, you know, professor, what am I going to do? We're in a pandemic. You know, there's 400 sports business programs out there in the country. How do we differentiate ourselves to get these jobs? And I go back to some of the things I'm telling you here is that, what are you going to do to differentiate yourself? What are you going to do to volunteer? What experience have you had in life that can elevate over some of your peers? These are all things that these students have to start thinking about now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one theme that we're going to develop over the summer is you've got to treat yourself as your own personal brand. And when you get to college, or even before you get to college, you've got to begin positioning yourself as a brand, not as a college student, because to your point, you've got to stand out. So one thing I want to talk about today is the value of your presence on LinkedIn. Michael, talk to the kids about how important it is to have a presence on LinkedIn, and two or three points of how to build that presence on LinkedIn. If they're reaching out to you, which we're going to encourage them to do, what are some of the things that would attract you to a student on LinkedIn or vice versa? Tell them the value and some pointers about that.
Yeah, so all of social media is extremely valuable if it's done the right way. And what I mean by that, Vin, is that you know, no future employer is going to care about you being out partying on campus or you doing things that are not relevant to the business. And so there has to be that separation as to what is the business social media aspect look versus your own personal media. And so if you take LinkedIn, for example, you know, that's a good business tool that helps students and even individuals and professionals, you know, network really well. But it has to be done in a sincere way that you're not just reaching out and expecting something back. You've read an article about their business or you've seen a post about their company and you like what they're doing and you have interest in it. And if, as long as you're not making the post or the message all about you, you're going to get responses or you're going to get redirected to certain people. Mm-hmm. And then I will tell you, having spoken now to your Melt U students for the last 2 years, fortunately, I was able to do it live when you had me in Atlanta, but several of them have reached out to me on LinkedIn, and it's all about the approach. You know, what are you looking to get out of your reach out? What questions are you going to ask? And ultimately, what are you going to do to prompt a response, you know, from somebody like me or somebody like you who, you know, has 1,000 things going on any given day?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you make a great point, and we tell the kids this a lot, is that value and values. And so if a person reaches out to you, a person reaches out to me, and I respect them enough, I'm honored that somebody would want to reach out, I'm going to grant them the courtesy to listen back to them. Because I tell these kids, if somebody doesn't respond to you after you've made that effort and after you've granted that, you know, that courtesy and respect, if they don't respond to you, they probably don't share your values, and it's probably not somewhere you would want to work anyway. And so it's very encouraging to learn that you have that open door for any and all comers. And so as we wrap up, this version of Virtual Melt U with Michael Schreck. Michael, what is one piece of advice that you would give these kids seeking jobs, trying to get in our industry, especially in a post-COVID world?
Vin, I go back to what I've said several times already, is that find something that you're passionate about, find something that helps you differentiate from your peers, and find companies or organizations that have similar values and beliefs to what you have, and go after it, mm-hmm. and figure out how to get your teeth cut in this industry.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, we people ask what you and I do for a living. I tell them that we're in the rejection business. That no, it doesn't mean no. It's just the first two letters of not yet. Talk about that being relentless in our industry, as you were talking about.
So Vin, if you're as bad looking as I am, and you're certainly not, I've been in the rejection business since I'm 12 years old, trying to ask people out on dates. So it just, you know, that's what we have to do. And that's when I said to you early on, as somebody told me I have a knack for sales, is that, you know, you don't ever give up. And sometimes you're down on the mat, and sometimes you got to figure out ways to, you know, get off the mat and figure out what the next opportunity is going to be. And if you are afraid of rejection and you're afraid of public speaking, then sales is not for you.
Right.
And that's okay. Right. Because people will find, you know, other opportunities and other career paths. But do what you like to do and do what you're passionate about. And don't be afraid to make mistakes and take challenges.
Yeah, that what we're going to tell the kids this summer is that a couple of things is it's not a question of if you're going to get thrown off the saddle. It's just a question of when. It's how you get up and back on the saddle. And the other piece of it, wisdom that I wish I had learned at a much earlier age, is never take rejection personal. We tend to personalize it because we're like, well, why didn't I get that job? Why didn't I get that gig? Why didn't I win that piece of business? Why didn't I get that client? And you just never know what goes into these decisions. So as we wrap up, talk about that, talk about a little bit about that, because again, if you're going to be in the rejection business, which we all are in, you can never take anything like this personal, can you?
Yeah, it's all about thick skin, you know, Vin. And if you let somebody reject you and ruin your day, it's just not going to work for you, because you're just going to be miserable. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to constantly get rejection. You know, you're going to get critiques as to why you didn't get this versus somebody else, or why you can't do business with X client because, you know, for X reason. And so it's just all about, you know, how do you bounce back from that, and how do you continue to press on? Mm-hmm. And that's the mentality and the mindset you have to have, whether it's an internship, it's job interviews, entry-level jobs. You know, Vin, I deal with it every day as the CEO of a company, right? Mm-hmm. How do you manage certain things that just, you know, all of a sudden don't bounce the right way? Mm-hmm. It's just part of life. Mm-hmm. And so as you figure that out, it's not just in business that you get rejected. It's life, right? And life throws a bunch of curveballs.
Right, right. And that's what we continue to talk to our kids about, is that life is not linear. And, you know, I say it's, you know, not a straight line. It's the great American scream machine roller coaster. But we are in a dynamic industry. It's an industry that's evolving. We'll come back and visit another day on how kids can help, you know, student athletes monetize their image. We know collegiate esports is emerging on campus, which is going to be another great opportunity that Michael's at the forefront of. But Michael Schreck, CEO and co-founder of Collegiate Sports Management Group. This has been a tremendous session. We really appreciate your time and contributions in the collegiate sports space, and particularly to the students of Melt University. So, Michael Schreck, thank you so much for joining us today on this episode of Virtual Melt University.
Vin, thank you. And if I can just close by saying one thing, is that I greatly appreciate our friendship and the respect we have for each other. And what you're doing running the Melt business day-to-day with the global brands that you represent is second to none. And what you've built with Melt U is fantastic, phenomenal. And any way that I can help you, your staff, or any of the Melt U students, you never hesitate to reach out.
Well, thank you, Michael. And it's people like you that make this industry great and tremendous. And I am sure that you will be hearing through LinkedIn a lot from our students of Melt U, particularly with you being in New York. A lot of kids aspire to go to New York and start their careers. I'm sure that you're going to hear from a lot of our kids, and we just certainly appreciate your time, advice, and wisdom today on Virtual Melt University.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. And that it's it for today's Melt University with Michael Schreck, CEO and co-founder of Collegiate Sports Management Group.
Thanks, Vince. Hope you enjoyed today's virtual class. We'll be back soon with another edition of Melt University 2020.